Welcome to this week's episode of The Fitness Solution. Today, I've got a wonderful interview lined up with you, or for you even. I've got a wonderful interview lined up for you with Amy Snelling, who is a personal trainer based in Norwich. Amy and I got talking on Instagram all about body confidence and what that means in the modern era, what that means in this era, how we can improve people's body confidence, and how you basically go about doing it. And that's what we kind of focused on. Amy's fantastic. She is an ex-primary school teacher, and she's now a personal trainer, and she's trying to help as many people as possible to just get confident, stop focusing on the scale so much, and really start working towards building up that inner confidence that we're all after. We had a really good chat. There were moments in the conversation where I felt quite challenged, which was great. And all the while, I've been a personal trainer and very aware that I help many women lose weight. I've always been aware that there has to be a balance to that. And it's important that we do address clients' confidence, self-esteem, and all of these other things. It's really important. And I've always, personally, when I've worked with clients, felt like I've been able to strike that balance well, although maybe not well enough at times. And some of the things Amy has spoken to me about and some of the things we discussed in this podcast really, really, really did hit home with me and gave me a good insight into going a little bit further with that kind of work. As well as if somebody comes to me and they want to lose weight, that's completely valid and understandable. And I have a duty to help them figure that out as well. So it really is a great discussion, and I can't wait to share it with you. Don't forget, if you want to join the Fitness Collective, that's my inner circle coaching group, you are more than welcome to join. It's just £20 a month, and you can do that by heading over to www.thegymstarter.com. Right, that's enough from me. Let's hand over to Amy. Welcome to this week's episode of The Fitness Solution. And on the other end of the line, I have a personal trainer, ex-teacher extraordinaire, wonderful, lovely human being called Amy Snelling. Say hello, Amy.
Hi, guys.
How are you today?
I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, great. This is that silly bit where we pretend that we did just talk for 4 minutes before I hit the record button. But we do it with every guest, so it's fine. And the audience will be chuckling along going, oh, he's done it again. Amy is a lovely human being that I've recently come across, and we've recently connected. And I wanted to get her on the podcast ASAP the second I found out about her, because she very much deals in a field of fitness and humanity, really, that I'm very fond of. I'm an advocate of, but in truth, I often feel like I probably don't quite understand it as well as I need to understand it. And that is kind of like, you know, the body confidence movement, the let's just feel good about who we are as much of the time as we can, as much as we can, and everything else. And so I wanted to get on today to have a real good chat about body confidence and about all the things that go into it, her story, where she's been, what she's been up to, and everything else, just so we can really get a better handle on it, see where we're at, and see what's going on. So without further ado, Amy, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, where you're from, what you do, how you ended up here right now on this podcast.
I think to really give some context to your listeners, I have to go a little bit back in time.
That's right. We've got all day. Yeah. Go back to the 1800s if we must.
A little bit of a life story, but not too far, hopefully. So even though I've had quite a disordered past with dieting and exercise, which I'm thankfully out of now, I do count myself lucky because that period was quite short. I've been quite lucky in the fact that I've never really attached much value to my body as I've moved through life. And I think that's partly due to the fact that I've always been straight sized. So there's an element of privilege there. Also, I grew up without Instagram, and, you know, which
it was a wonderful time, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, the memories. And
when it was just Game Boys and N64s, it was such a lovely time.
I've still got my N64.
Oh, you're a boss. That's amazing. Yeah, have you still got GoldenEye? You still have, right, you've nailed life. As long as you got that, you've nailed life.
Podcast now, there's nothing else to talk about.
Should we just go and play GoldenEye? I'd love to.
But so I grew up without, I mean, there were magazines, and magazines have always been quite an insidious form of, you know, gaming and making us feel quite crap about ourselves. But I was always so busy that I've never, you know, let that affect me. And when that did come into my life was I was already pretty low. So I was training to be a teacher, about to start my NQT year. So high levels of stress from teacher training and that sort of thing. I was a single parent. Oh, wow. So there was the pressures of being a single parent. Bit of financial insecurity in the fact that on one wage I paid for one house on my own, and you know, things were tight and I was on a bit of a budget, but I was lucky in the sense that my parents lived around the corner, so I literally used to just go and raid their fridge like some sort of wild teenager.
I still do that. It's fine. I think that's just the right of being a child,
it's
right?
It's just one of those things. You get to your parents' house and you just open the fridge before you even say hello. It's just one of those things you never get out of. And I'd been in quite toxic, abusive relationships before that as well. So all these intersections just came into play at once. And I started to think about the fact that maybe I might want to, you know, go on dates and things like that, but I didn't feel very confident, and I decided that I was going to be a runner, just like that. Decided that I was going to start running. I'd started following a very famous body lean in 15 Instagrammer.
Oh, Mr. PT, yeah, Mr. PE teacher for the nation.
Yeah, and you know, lovely guy. I'm, you know, he's full of energy, and he was the first sort of fitness person I started following on Instagram. And it's all very much like, you know, you do your 20-minute HIIT because that burns the most calories. And I thought...
It doesn't.
Yeah. Disclaimer. unless you enjoy HIIT, don't do it.
And unless you have joints that can manage it, don't do it.
Yeah.
And as long as you're not overweight and feel very self-conscious when you're doing it, don't do it. Like, we could just do a whole podcast on that, but let's not.
Talk about HIIT later on and different exercise, but there's very much that pressure of you pick your exercise based on how many calories you think it's going to burn. And then already that opens a door into a very disordered world where you're just attaching the value of exercise to just, you know, what you've eaten. So that was the sort of first step. And then because I couldn't really get to a gym very easily, being a single parent, you know, I couldn't just leave my daughter upstairs, you know, in bed and go, see you later, I'm going to the gym. I bought a treadmill because I did have the space for one. But this became like my obsession. It was, I needed to run every day for as long as possible because that burnt the most calories. And with that then became searching for more ideas on Instagram. And that's when I started following more of your sort of like Fitspo type individuals. And through that, my relationship with exercise and eating became very unhealthy, very disordered, very damaged. I'd go through long periods of not eating any food at all. To the point where I felt faint at work, which is obviously so bad when you're responsible for teaching children. But the thing, looking back now, that's so normalized. You know, you ignore your hunger and you exercise to, you know, modify your body in some way, shape or form. And after a couple of years of doing that and controlling my eating and exercising that way, my school environment also became a little bit toxic. We had a lot of staff leave. That's like a separate issue, but that job became 100 times more stressful.
Very stressful. Yeah. I've worked with quite a few primary school teachers, and my God, that is a stressful industry for a bunch of people who just want to, for a bunch of people who just literally want to help develop the minds of young people and look after them and care for them. the amount of stress, politics, worry, unneeded everything that goes into that business. I mean, if you want to help the young minds of the future, then do. Don't let me stand in your way. But my God, you have to be ready for a whole world of crap coming at you. And it is a very stressful environment. I mean, the primary school teachers I've taught or trained high levels of depression, high levels of stress, high levels of constant worry, concern, never feeling accepted, never feeling right, never feeling normal. It's a whole list of very bad symptoms that just get worse and worse over time because the government just seem to attack it even more and more. And it just doesn't help. Yeah, and there seems to be no grace or gratitude from parents in it, and I think that's the worst bit. It seems to be a world of constant complaining, like, you know, this whole Karen thing that's going on at the minute. I can't decide where I stand on it yet, right? I like its humorousness, but I think it's probably a bit harsh too. But it does just feel like it's an entire world of Karens in primary schools, and it's not nice. So it must have, just to give context to how stressed it must have been.
You have to be incredibly thick-skinned to be a teacher, but then you're also falling into that trap of, like, you're always trying to be the strong one. You know, I don't need any help, I'm okay. So if you're then super stressed with your job and then you're stressing your body out with extreme diets and over-exercising and doing nothing else to take care of yourself, you're basically just going
down and down.
And I ended up being diagnosed with depression, severe anxiety. Anxiety is something that I've always suffered with in sort of, you know, drips and drabs, but it's always been manageable. But that went completely out of control with, like, panic attacks and mood swings and heart palpitations, you know, and all the rest of the typical sort of anxiety things. And I had to have some time off. And in that time off, I was just a bit like, whoa, what am I doing to myself? This is awful. I'm mentally exhausted, and I'm just like pounding myself with physical exhaustion and then not feeding myself enough food to then recover from that. And then there was like cycles of binge eating as well, because whereas obviously I'd not eat, I'd be restricting all day and then I would be binging in the evening. And it just all collided at once, caused this huge mess. And I had some time, I went on supply after that, which was okay. And then meeting my now husband and getting the chance to move to a new city meant that I just got that next chance to go, what do I want to do? What is it that I want to do? And I've always loved fitness. Although I had that unhealthy period of time with it, in school, I always loved sport. I've always loved being outside and, you know, being active. And I was like, I want to get back to that. I want to get back to that relationship with exercise where it added to my life, not, you know, took away from it. And that's when I got more into weightlifting. And I turned around to my husband one day, just randomly, and I went, I want to be a PT. And obviously being the most supportive, lovely person that he is, was just like, do it. Like, you can do it. That's fine. Like, make it happen. And then here I am. And along the way in that journey, I discovered intuitive eating. I started reading alternative to the mainstream, like books like Health at Every Size, and books of that sort of nature, following different accounts on social media of people who were putting out that message, following people who didn't look anything like me as well, also played a huge part. So actually reading the experiences of people who are in different kinds of bodies.
You know, that's an amazing point. That's a really intellectual, very intuitive, wonderful point that I think we just do not understand enough in this world. Like, because now you've said that, it's just a light bulb's gone for me. It's like, yeah, I've done the same recently. Like, just reading posts from people who don't live, and I think very much a lot of people on Instagram and these places, they probably aspire, they probably follow people whose bodies they want to become.
Yeah.
Right? They follow like you did, and I do as well, a few people, I'm not going to lie, or like in terms of business for me, I follow, you know, people like Jordan Syatt or James Smith and people like that, you know, people who I'm kind of like working towards to kind of emulate to an extent, yeah. Right?
They have the platform that you...
Yeah, as a dose of inspiration, and also because I find, especially Jordan, he's a wonderful fella, I love talking to him, I love chatting with him, and he inspires me every day to keep working on my business. However, you do get an element of imposter syndrome. You do get an element of, I'm never going to make it. I'm never going to do it. I'm never going to have this effect on people. And that's very stressful. And so when you're only looking at people who have the body you want and you're not getting there, it's only going to stress you out even more, right? So actually looking almost in the rearview mirror and looking at people who have bodies who are even further away from where you are to that point might be really good to help you gain a perspective. And yeah, it might be amazing to just, and then read their experiences and see how happy they are about who they are sometimes and how sad they can get about who they are sometimes. And then what you'll do is you'll understand, you'll create a watercolor of a tapestry almost of different insights and different experiences and stuff like that, and that will help give you a true perspective on humanity. And that's a really good point. Thank you for bringing that up.
That's all right. And it's not even necessarily that I'm following other body types because I think, oh, they're not necessarily trying to change their bodies.
Yeah,
they're people who are engaging in exercise and doing it in a way that makes them feel good, and it's become not about changing their bodies at all. It's about being present in the moment and happy with who they are and enjoying exercise for all the other benefits that it brings them, and also listening to their experiences of how they've been treated because of their body size. Then you need those perspectives so that you can understand how much damage the fitness industry is doing in terms of, you know, its fat phobia and its weight stigma. And then as you move along, as you start to center other people's experiences and other people's journeys over your own, it starts to become nothing to do with your body. Like I no longer, something that I used to only focus on was my body.
Yeah.
And now I don't think about my body at all because I'm so interested in, you know, how has that made that person feel? How has that affected their relationship with exercise? You know, how have those comments put that person off the gym? Now it's all about everybody else's body and everyone else's experience. And that's, you know, that's what I feed off. That's what I like to explore and interact with. I'm 24 weeks pregnant, but people
follow me. That's amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah, follow me on Instagram. People keep going, oh, congratulations. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. For that one.
I forgot. I'm pregnant because I very rarely think about what's happening to my body or what my body's doing or what it looks like, because by, you know, shifting my focus completely, I now think more about bodies in terms of like social justice and everyone feeling like they have a place within the fitness industry if they want one and all that sort of thing. So yeah, I've gone completely in the opposite direction, which has been an amazing journey, really.
And what kind of effect has that had on you as a person and how you interact with the world and how you interact with yourself?
Yeah, so as a personal trainer, because when I did the course and became qualified and got accepted into my gym, which I'm very lucky to be in, I've got a really great team of people who, you know, none of them have got my ethos. None of them are like me at all. But they're all very open to having the conversation, and they're all very supportive of what I do. I think some of them see it as, oh, Amy's found her niche and she attracts certain types of people.
They just see it in types of business, right?
Yeah. But they are, I mean, a lot of them are quite a lot younger than me, and they're very happy to have open discussions about you know, weight stigma and weight and its links to health, and they're always very open to listening. So I feel very lucky because I know that when I talk to other personal trainers who have my sort of ethos, who are in different gyms, they don't have the same positive experience. They have a lot of negativity. They have a lot of the other trainers like talking about them and being, you know, just being mean, like school ground sort of playground comments and things like
that. Been there, done that.
Yeah. And so when I came into my role as a PT, I already sort of had a really good idea of what I wanted to help people achieve. So when, you know, everyone comes to me, you know, I'd say 80% of my clients come to me because they want to lose weight, and we completely reframe that. So they say, I want to lose weight, and I ask them why. What will weight loss bring you? And they say normally things like, I want to feel better about myself. I want to feel more confident. I want to, you know, and sometimes it's, I want to fit into this dress, or my wedding's coming up. And we completely shift the focus off all of that. And, you know, we use exercise as a way to reconnect with their bodies. So a lot of them have got quite high stress jobs, so it's a chance for them to connect with their bodies. I mean, how often do you sit? Because one of my clients is a teacher, and I said to her the other day, you know, how often do you sit at work and think about, you know, your own body and what it's doing? And she was like, never. So I was like, you know, you come into the gym and you can move and go, yeah, this is, you know, what can I feel working here? You know, you're doing this exercise, what's working? Can I contract that muscle? How can I reconnect with my body in this way? You know, using your breath as you move through movements to really just feel a lot more grounded. So there's that element of it as well. We I don't take any physical measurements in terms of weighing or body size. So we focus on the behaviours and the feelings. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I want to get fitter and stronger. Well, you can do that without focusing on how much you weigh at all. So a lot of them are very like, oh, OK, well, I'm not sure, but I'll give it a go. Yeah. And then others are that they'll entertain me in the session and they want to work with me. And I think they want to believe in it, but they still are battling things and outside of the gym as well. They're battling demons about their bodies. But at some point, what's nice is a lot of my clients have been with me for a long time.
Yep.
So they feel completely unpressured to attend the gym, perform in any particular way, and they use it as a chance to completely relax. And that's meant that they then stay with me for a long time. And now some of them are just starting to connect the dots with, this makes me feel amazing, and it doesn't have to be about changing my body.
Can you define for me a long time?
6 months.
Yeah. I'm, you know, listening to you, it sounds exactly the same way I work. Like, I mean, I would say I do a couple of things differently. So if someone comes to me with fat loss as a goal or weight loss as a goal and stuff like that, I will engage them in that conversation, and I will happily tell them how to obviously calorie deficit and how to basically lose weight. But I will then very slowly start disattaching the value of what that number says to whatever they're doing. I personally, when I work with clients, I don't get overly focused on what the numbers are doing. You know, it's all about, how do you feel? How's it been? How's your stress? How's this? How's that? And it is incredible, because I have a really high retention rate of people staying with me for a long time as well. Like, you know, some of my clients have been with me for 3-4 years, and like week in, week out without fail. And people keep coming back to me as well, which is nice. And it's interesting when you don't box it in such a way of start, result, finish, let's go, and you start trying to teach people. Like I say, I impact people's brains more than I do their bodies, because I help to change the way they feel about themselves and the way they view the world and the way they view their role within the world and also within their internal world. And when you start doing that, it's amazing how long it takes for people to come away from the years and years of fitness industry crap, basically. And it does take a long time. And I mean, you know, 6 months is, in my opinion, from my experience, is pretty quick to get those thoughts changed. And for me, it takes a lot of, sorry, say that again.
Don't think you're ever over it either.
No.
You're never healed from, you know, all the insidious, like you say, all the bullshit that's around. But it's about being resilient and critical when those moments arrive. And you need to do a lot of self-talk. So, and I think my clients find it quite reassuring when I say that I still have moments where that sort of diet culture and that, you know, all those toxic messages, they do creep in. The other day, I mean, I avoid dairy because it's a huge trigger for IBS and gastric issues.
Don't get me started on diet dairy. I've had like 10 days from hell the last 10 days. I had some really bad indigestion a little while ago, like about probably what's the date, about 10 days ago. And I think it was probably a mixture of anxiety and just maybe overeating or whatever, but it was really bad. And so I went and got that sorted. And then the next day after I ate something, I felt really nauseous. And then I was like, what is going on? And basically, slowly but surely, over the last 10 days, for about 4 or 5 days now, I've basically been lactose free and feel so much better in my gut for it. But I'm on medications, I've got probiotics, I'm eating sauerkraut. God, that's disgusting. And you know, I'm trying to do all these things. And God, yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because I don't think I have IBS. I'm pretty sure I don't. I just think I was getting bloated. I was feeling horrible. And so, yeah, I've had to go on a lactose-free, which is annoying because I can't have any of the protein that I've got in my house at the minute. So I've got to go find some vegan protein and all this stuff. Yeah, but I'm still getting used to it. It's interesting you bring that up because it's so relevant in my life right now. So do you have those kind of gastrointestinal
things? Yeah, so I've had IBS for as long as I can remember. And it's never been... I've spoke to doctors about it, but you never get a diagnosis for IBS. It's more of a, if you experience, you know, ABC more than 4 times a month for a X amount. Yeah, that it's more of
a
one
bit
of those.
Like PCOS.
Yeah, it's and I know that like anxiety and stress really massively affects my digestive system. That's been no secret for a while now. But I always used to, after a bowl of cereal or like oats or something with milk, I would instantly be bloated. And whenever people talk about bloating, it's really important to remind us that like what works for somebody won't necessarily work for someone else. And it's very complicated. But
and bloating is really normal as well.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I went out for lunch with my parents for the first time in like 6 months. And I had a vegan burger and chips with a side of sweet potato chips. I literally had burger chips with a side of chips. It was amazing. It was the best thing ever. But I felt really bloated after. And then I went and swam 50 lengths and I felt really sick after that. And I'm like, well, it's no surprise, is it? Like, I'm pretty sure this isn't what's going on in my life right now. This is because I've just behaved like an idiot. The 50 lengths were great, by the way, but yeah, it was great. But yeah, like bloatedness, there's an element of normality to that after you eat big meals and especially carb heavy meals too. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
And also tight clothing can make me bloated, so not even necessarily having food. If I've got a pair of jeans on that are like a little bit tight and I spend a lot of time sitting down in them, even if I don't eat, I can be bloated. But one thing that intuitive eating taught me in particular is how to use foods to teach you about your own body and using them as a chance to explore how they make you feel. And when I reduced dairy and stopped eating it, I felt a lot better. But that's personal to me. That doesn't mean that I can then go on Instagram and be like, buy my dairy-free meal plan. Like, that's
because you have a conscience.
You know, beat the bloat with my 5 steps or whatever, but that's because that's personal to me, and that's what intuitive eating is really all about. It very much puts the control back in the hands of the individual to make their own mind about things.
So with that, something I say is everybody is different and every body is different.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that just sums it up, I think. Yeah.
But the other day, I was looking at some muffins to see if they had any dairy in them. And as I was looking at the ingredients list, I found my eyes diverting to how many calories were in these muffins. Right. And I had to really do a bit of self-talk of like, you know, this information isn't inherently dangerous. Like, you know, that information isn't bad for me to know. But it's what I do with that information, whether I let that affect my choice, that's when it can become harmful. And then that's obviously leads you down the path of, you know, only picking certain foods because of their, you know, how we value them to our health. And when I explain these things to clients and say, you know, this still happens to me, they then realize that this is not really a destination. This is more of a journey. And while we live in the society as it is, we will always have to come up against these roadblocks, and these things will always happen to us. And we'll always, you know, we might see something on TV and go, so, you know, maybe that's the diet that I didn't try. Maybe that was the one that got away, and maybe that has all the answers, and you still feel like that. But it's then just about being critical. You know, this is a product that someone's trying to make money off. Who does it benefit? Probably them, not me. And doing that self-talk, why do I feel like I need to go on that? And just going from there. And it's just something that you never really get over.
Yeah, a lot. I find with a lot of people who I work with, a good way of battling, not battling that, but a good way of trying to build a defense against that is really educating them fully on how energy works. And, you know, it kind of doesn't matter what camp you sit in, whether you sit in, obviously, you know, you're big on intuitive eating, which is great, whether you sit in the camp of really strict calorie counting, whether you sit in the camp of keto, whether you sit in the camp of Slimming World or whatever. If you can just really get your head around the science of energy in, energy out, calorie surplus, calorie deficit, calorie maintenance, all these things, if you can understand that, then when you come across things like calories on a muffin and things like that, you can see how it fits into your world, and you can see how it will fit into what it is you're working on. I have a massive love-hate relationship with calories. I really do. Like, not personally, but for people out there. Like, I'm very lucky in I could probably eat whatever the hell I want whenever I want. And I'll just, you know, I have like a resting metabolism of like 2,900 or something ridiculous. And I can't physically eat that personally every day. And so I do find it hard because people need to be educated on this stuff. But I also am aware of the flip side of that coin, that it can lead people into this very dangerous hole, in this very dangerous place. And finding that balance as a trainer and as someone who's trying to help these people is something I really struggle with each and every day. Because when I listen to someone like you, I'm like, it makes so much sense. It's so lovely. It's so wonderful. And it's so enlightening. And I can see how it would give freedom to a lot of people. I really can. And then on the other side of the coin, I'm also like, but there are also huge swathes of people who probably need an element of understanding and education in that field and developing that side of it as well, to then bring about just that balance they need in order to just be able to live the rest of their life in a place of freedom for themselves based on their own personal subjective experience of the life they lead.
Absolutely. I like I say, all the trainers I work with are in exactly the same position that you are. They understand that behaviors can be disordered. They understand that counting calories can lead to eating disorders. And they're all really lovely people, but the clients still come to them and they put them and teach them about a calorie deficit. And that's what they do. But when you start looking into, when you start reading everything else about weight stigma and all that thing. Mm. I mean, we were all very against the eat less, move more rhetoric, but I feel like calorie deficit also oversimplifies things for a large majority of the population.
That couldn't be more true. Like, a calorie deficit is simple, but it's not easy. And I would never ever put someone into a calorie deficit if they didn't understand that really we need to resolve your relationships with food first. We need to resolve your empathy with yourself. We need to resolve really why you want to lose weight. We need to resolve your self-confidence, your self-esteem. Like, I call these like the roots of fat loss. Like, I talk about it as a tree. And when people first start, and a lot of trainers will do this, when people first start in fitness, they'll go to like the leaves and the branches and they'll pick exercise, nutrition, and, you know, whatever, there's another one I can't remember, and they'll kind of do that, and they'll stay on the leaf, but they don't look at really what's supporting that tree. And what supports that tree is the roots that go so far and deep into the ground you can't even fathom how big they are and how strong they are. And that is your self-talk. That is your compassion. That is your understanding for who you are and where you come from. That is your willingness to be loved and your willingness to have what's the word, vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And empathy and perspective and all of these things. And once you know, like 99.9% of my work is on that, and then it's like, okay, now you can do a calorie deficit. And then once they resolve that, they understand how this really works by this being the calorie deficit, the exercise and nutrition, and stuff like that. Yeah. Whereas I think a lot of people don't respect that enough. They're like, someone comes in and they're binge eaters and they have eating disorders and they, I don't know, probably have a history of bulimia or anorexia or something like that. And they just feel shit about themselves and they think losing weight is going to help them. Really, you have to deal with the feeling shit about themselves first. And that's, I feel that's my responsibility as a trainer, more so than getting people to lose weight. In fact, I would probably argue not many of my clients have lost huge swathes of weight. And I have many transformation pictures to back that up, because really they lose the weight kind of up here. Do you know what I mean? In their brains.
And then that becomes more of like, not physical body weight, that's sort of my more like the weight of society pressuring them into feeling like they need to look a certain way. And
they become more anti-fragile.
Yeah, I love the tree analogy with the roots. And I think
I'll send you the infographic. You can look at
it.
Yeah, of course I have.
Yeah. And I think if you're gonna go one step further with that, the soil that the roots are in are then gonna be Yeah, so that would be
That's amazing. Yeah, magazines, Boris Johnson. Yeah. I like that.
All the pressures from society and all the messages we've internalized as we've grown up.
Well, maybe that should be the city on top. Because the soil is the thing that gives soil is what gives the tree the minerals. Ah, maybe I need to do a trees of the roots of fat loss part two. And yeah, build a city on top, and that's what's pushing the tree away and down and suffocating the tree. And yet the soil is like the minerals and I don't know what the minerals would be. I'm sure someone's screaming at their headphones right now going, it needs to be this, it needs to be this.
They can message you on Instagram and let you know what the
minerals are. Yeah, of course you can. That's amazing. So I had a question for you. Like when you was going through the kind of slow dip through your stress and your eating disorder and everything that was going on, all thanks to Mr. Wicks, that's probably not fair. I shouldn't lay that at his door. But were you aware it was happening as it was happening, or was it only through hindsight you can gain a perspective on that?
Definitely only through hindsight. When you're
that's such a conundrum, isn't it? Like if we could somehow help people realize this as it's happening, it would be so much better for them, right?
When they're in that situation, is they have a lot of confirmation bias. So if they've lost weight, or they're following people on Instagram who are striving for a particular kind of body, they're getting messages from everywhere that's just backing up what they're doing. So, you know, if you're actively trying to lose weight, you are only looking for messages which confirm, you know, and give grounding to what you're trying to do. Of course, you're not going to be seeking out messages that are telling you that weight loss is potentially harmful and can lead to disordered behaviors. Why would you go and seek out that information when in your head you've attached being a certain size to your worth, to your happiness, to everything else? And I feel like, especially as a trainer with my ethos, when I do post certain things on Instagram, it can make people's like what they're doing, they feel attacked. But we've got to be very clear that people who are on diets are not the issue. It is the society that makes them and the culture that makes them feel like they have to. So whenever I post a message on social media that sort of to unpick these things, I always make it very clear that I don't have a problem with anyone who's on a diet. I don't have a problem with anyone who has body goals. I don't have a problem with anybody who counts calories or macros. I have a problem with the society that creates that pressure. And it's nothing actually to do with the individuals themselves, because people aren't static and they are not their beliefs. They can grow and change and learn and open their mind to different things. And we need to normalize changing your opinion when presented with new information, because a lot of people just go, oh, well, that's not my experience, so I don't buy into that. But we need to normalize just being open. And I feel like you're on a good path, because you're very open to these conversations and these alternative viewpoints, whereas a lot of fat loss coaches are not. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like they feel threatened that if people suddenly stopped caring about losing weight, that they would just be out of a job. But that's completely not true. I've been so busy since my gym opened. All of my clients have come back, and I've picked up maybe 5 or 6 new clients in the last 2 weeks. And, you know, it's just simply not true. You'll never lose value in teaching people how to exercise properly. So whether that's coming from an exercise to, you know, facilitate weight loss, or an exercise to facilitate good health and happiness, you will never devalue that service, no matter which avenue you're presenting it from. But a lot of people are very dismissive of that alternative of, you know, you can just exercise because it makes you feel good, and you can just, I mean, and a lot of people get intuitive eating very wrong. They think it's about eating whatever
you want. As you want.
Yeah. Eating whatever you want, whenever you want. And it really isn't that at all. You have to unlearn all your dieting behaviors so that you can then relearn how to look after yourself with food. Food is a valid form of self-care if you are privileged enough to have access to fresh fruit and vegetables and all that sort of thing. And there's that's why the last part of intuitive eating is honoring your body with gentle nutrition. Because it's very hard to come away from dieting and choose foods because they make you feel good without attaching any worth to that. Like, I love fruit and vegetables, but I had to get to a place where I picked them because I wanted them and not because I felt like I had to have them because health or so-and-so said I should eat this. And there's also, they talk a lot about body choice congruence, which is, for example, I weight train, so part of my diet has to correspond with training
and recovery. In your behaviors.
Yeah. So I might finish a workout and really fancy nipping to Greg's to buy a box of Yum Yums because they're delicious.
Hell yeah. Why would you?
Yeah. But actually, my body choice congruence overcomes that, because actually, I mean, I'll still probably go and have the Yum Yum because Yum Yums, but
first, carbs of life.
Yeah. But first, I'll probably look at something that's more in line with my recovery and the fact that my muscles need certain things after I've trained. So intuitive eating is not just, you know, you sit and eat a pack of biscuits because you eat whatever you want. It's very much about weighing up all the factors of food. What do I want? What will make me feel my best? How do I want to feel after I've eaten is such a huge one. Like, you know, do I want to feel full, and do I want to feel like I've nourished myself? Do I want this meal to last for X amount of time, or am I not bothered about having a bit of quick energy that, you know, and I'm going to be hungry again in half an hour? As an intuitive eater, you get to weigh up all of these things instead of just, I should have the salad because, you know, because salads are healthy. So it's a lot more complex and
nuanced.
There's a lot more going on than people. I mean, a lot of weight loss and fat loss coaches really love to slam intuitive eating and say that it's very like woo woo and hippie, but it's very individual. You get to interpret it in whichever way you want, and you get your control back. And I used to think about food 24/7 because I wasn't eating enough of it. I wasn't eating the right amounts of it. And now I barely think of food at all. I've got so much brain space to enjoy other things. You know, I've never been a gardener, but all of a sudden I'm buying plants. Like,
them alive? That's the key.
Yes. They are. I mean, I was dubbed the plant murderer at one point.
Yeah, my fiance is a plant murderer.
A friend kept buying me house plants, but every time she'd come again, the one she previously bought would be just like a twig. Dead. But I've reinvented myself as like a plant mum now.
Yes.
And they're all alive and thriving. And you know, that's something I would have never considered doing before, because when you're just like, oh, I've got to work out and I've got to count these calories, it's just, you don't have space for that. And again, that's not saying that everybody who counts calories is in that mindset, but it can lead to that. So yeah.
I think it can very much lead to that, depending on how much worth and value you and your trainer put upon it. Ooh. Like I always, at the heart of everything I say to people, at the heart of everything I do with people, at the heart of everything I'm trying to put out there for people, is basically I ask them, will this nourish you? So if you're going to choose what you're going to eat, think about the word nourishment. And I've said this on the podcast thousands of times. I love the word nourishment. It's got that. It's like biting an apple.
Quite gritty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty, but it also encompasses, when you say it well, nourishment, and this is the actor coming out in me, but when you say it well, it gives you that feeling of everything, right? It gives you that feeling of, hang on, it's something not like, bringing out something from the earth. Like it kind of makes you feel very human when you say it, and especially with that in the middle of it, it's great. It's bad for a microphone, but it's great. And and I'm like, the thing is, what you need to remember is a donut can nourish you.
Yeah.
Pizza can nourish you, because nourishment doesn't just mean, oh, how much magnesium is in this thing? How much riboflavin can we get? And without even talking about macros, it means emotionally, how does it nourish you? Like, you know, I said to my mum the other day, I'm like, since lockdown began, all I've wanted is a pizza. All I've wanted is a takeaway pizza from Papa John's or something, right? Now I'm lactose intolerant, it's going to suck. And I don't even enjoy eating those pizzas. But the act of purchasing it and having a bite of one and not wanting anything else will nourish something inside of me. Mm. I know that. And that's okay. It's fine to have to create that balance. There's going to be times in your life where you need more nourishment, more mental nourishment and emotional nourishment from your food, as opposed to physical health nourishment. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, another side of what will nourish you is your belief in congruence with your goals? Is your behavior in congruence with your goals? I had the same chat with a client the other day, and she was like, oh, I just feel like it's never coming off. I feel like, and you know, she's having one of these sort of emotional blow-ups which occur. And I said to her, what are you really annoyed about here? What is really, really annoying you? And she went, well, it's the fact that I haven't done it for a week. And I was like, right. So it's the fact that your behavior isn't encompassing what you want out of what it is you're doing. And she was like, well, yeah. And I'm like, okay, so that's fine. You can be annoyed about that. You've had a week away from it. Great. So what's next? And when she realized that, I think it was like, relief. Of course, it's not the fact that the scale's never moving. It's not the fact that she feels like she's never losing weight. It's the fact that her life, what she did for a week, didn't match what she truly desires. And when you do that, you get into a very stressful place, and you're basically trying to put two negatives together, and we know that's going to repel.
I think it's really interesting when we, as trainers, when we talk about behaviors of clients as well, because that can create that echo chamber effect again, where, I mean, we work with people who have got disposable income who can afford PT sessions.
Well, if they had more disposable income,
yeah,
though.
And they have, and if you've got disposable income for PT sessions, you've probably got, you know, you've got your gym membership, you've got your time to come to the gym, and you've also probably got a little bit more leeway to change the foods that you buy. And I think the trouble with, especially when trainers are putting messages out on Instagram, you tend to create a message which is directed at people like your clients. And they're a very small section of society. And I think that's where a lot of miscommunication occurs, and where messages can become problematic and make people, you know, feel bad about the fact that they can't change their behaviours, is because we can get into this bubble where we're going, to change your behaviours, you need to do this, this and this. And there's probably, when you're putting content out into the wider world that anybody can read, there's always going to be somebody who picks that up and goes, well, I can't do that, and now I feel bad. So if you can change your behavior, I think it's really important to understand that that's very privileged if you can.
But it's also very hard.
Yeah.
And just because you're in a position in which you can do it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come easily to you.
No.
It's really hard to change your behavior. Really hard, especially the older you are, it's going to be harder because it's more indoctrined. Two, your body's going to feel comfortable where you're at in the current behavior situation you're having, i.e. kind of your calorie amount, and it's going to start playing havoc with you if you start cutting calories from it. And it is a process. And this is the thing. I think where we probably really match up I think we match up on a lot of things, to be honest. But, you know, it's once you start aligning a goal, a tangible numeric goal to anything, you are going to very much put yourself into like a pressure cooker of time and a pressure cooker of stress, anxiety, and worry. And when you can not do that, and when you can really put your perspective into the process, and you can just enjoy the ride that you're on, whether it takes 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, I really do not give a shit. I mean, if you want to pay me for 30 years, be my guest. But when you can really put your life into the process and you can just understand that it's going to be a roller coaster and that's part of the fun, then you're going to be happier. You're going to enjoy that roller coaster so much more. We've all been on a roller coaster, right? Where we just wanted to get off. I remember getting on Nemesis when I was like, I think I was like 13 years old. And the second that thing locked me in, it was like, oh, I want to get off, Dad, I want to get off. And he was like, you can't, it's too late. I'm like, no, I want to get off. It's too late, you can't, sit tight. And I just screamed and cried my whole way around Nemesis because I was so focused on the goal of it ending, right? And then like a couple of years later, I went back to Nemesis. I really friggin' enjoyed it because I just knew to enjoy the roller coaster as opposed to worry about it finishing or worrying about getting off. What an analogy. But yeah, and that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. This has been great, this chat. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, when you said like trainers in your gym, they'll come with fat loss and stuff like that. And they'll kind of like be like, okay, calorie deficit, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, go away, do it, and everything else. I think a lot of those issues can come up when when trainers tend to have this attitude of slapping the same system onto everybody, right? Of like, here's my 12-week plan, go do it, and you'll lose X. Whereas you really have to open up your empathy. You have to understand that every single human being that comes to you is different. Like, I don't think I train any of my clients the same way. Like, I understand the principles of resistance training and I understand the principles of fitness and how we all need to exist within that. But they all have completely different bodies. They're all completely different humans. And we have to appreciate that and accept that. And we have to understand that what's going to work for one human isn't going to work for another human. Yes, there can be correlations between different humans and you can borrow from one to another and everything else and build that tapestry of your training. But when you just try and treat everyone the same, when you don't listen to how somebody's feeling, when you don't look them in the eye and say, how are you today? And you don't genuinely care about their response, or if you pretend you care just because you want their 300 quid or whatever, then you're in a very dangerous place.
Yeah, and I think that mentality then needs to be applied to wider society, like how you interact with everybody, whether it's somebody on the bus or in Tesco. We need to start looking at our health as a little bit more connected instead of individual, because how you treat someone else can really impact their day. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think this is the trouble with all the government thing that's come out of the minute with
Don't get me started.
You know, they've put all this onus on the individual and it ignores so much. Like for a majority of people who are maybe existing in a larger body, a calorie deficit is going to do very little when they don't even feel comfortable walking down the street without somebody shouting offensive language at them. You know, they definitely don't feel comfortable coming into a space like a gym. I get messages on my Instagram all the time of people who have had one bad experience in the gym in terms of their body and they've not been back since. So
I wrote a whole blog article on it, how to stop being scared of the gym. Because it needs addressing. And I've had many clients like refuse to work out in front of mirrors because they can't stand looking at themselves, and it can be a very triggering place for them, and that's fair enough and understandable. And then you have to adapt to that. I like, do you know what the WHO, like the World Health Organization, definition is of health?
Yeah, so being free from disease.
So yeah, it's a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like everything that defines it, and it says not merely the absence. It's not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. Now I looked that up. Like I don't just know that in my brain. I'm not that clever. Although I can recite Shakespeare, but that's a whole different story. But it's like, and I remind people of this all the time. It's not just about the size of your body. It's not just about how much weight you can lift. It's about how you connect with your community. It's about your finances. It's about your, whether you go to church, or not that you have to go to church, but yeah. Church builds a wonderful community of connection. And it's almost like you have to envisage your community as your church. And how do you interact in that place? You know, are you having genuine conversations with genuine people? And is that a multifaceted amount of people, you know, and stuff like that?
And that's when, you know, all your social determinants of health come in. Because they have more of an impact on our health than our individual behaviours, and they can also affect how easy or difficult we find it to engage in health promoting behaviours.
Yeah.
And you know, all of our intersections don't just exist in a vacuum.
Okay.
We're not just a body size and that's it. We're not just a gender. We're not just a skin colour. We're not just a social class. All of these things collide all at once to determine, you know, everything about us. And I think we need to be really sensitive to the fact that some people, and again, even me and you sitting here and saying, you know, these are our five top tips for feeling comfortable in the gym, it's really difficult for some body sizes to relate to that. And we have to understand that just because we feel really comfortable in a gym doesn't mean that that's the case for other people.
I don't. For a long period of my life, I didn't feel comfortable in the gym. I remember training clients and I'm standing looking at myself in the mirror going, flipping heck, you're really skinny. You really don't look like a trainer. You're really this, you're really that. For a long, long time, I have felt very, very uncomfortable in the gym quite often. And it's only now that I can back my life in the gym up with a world of knowledge, understanding, experience, and basically career, has that pressure released from me. But I don't. I genuinely didn't for a very long time. I don't feel comfortable around that bro mentality, around men that are like that. I feel very caged in by that.
And that's also a product of weight stigma. So yeah. On the opposite end
of the spectrum. Yeah, I mean, I think I should talk to more people about this, because for a long time in the gym I used to work in before lockdown occurred, there was a trainer. Every time I'd walk past him, he'd lift up his shorts and show off the size of his quads. And it was like, it wasn't because, well, he was very proud of his quadriceps, let's face it. But it was also like, you don't have legs like me, you suck. And that is weight stigmatization. And that used to make me feel like crap. But I'm a skinny guy moaning about weight stigmatization. I feel like not many people are going to necessarily respond to that. But it exists. It's there, you know.
When we talk about weight stigma, there's sort of three different types of how that can present in someone's life. So as somebody with thin privilege, like me and you have,
yeah,
we can suffer personal weight stigma. And that's everything that we do to ourselves as a product of all the messages that we've absorbed about health and body size. And that's a very personal thing. And then a level up from that is your like intrapersonal. So that is an example, that trainer doing that to you.
Mm.
That's somebody else, you know, making you feel self-conscious about your body through their behaviors and actions. So that's an example of intrapersonal. That could be somebody telling their partner that they need to lose weight, or,
mm-hmm.
You know, or having someone in the street shout, you know, horrible names about you because of the size of your body. And then you've got the third one, which is the one that me and you can't understand, because we'll never have that experience in our bodies. And that's the systemic oppression from society around people's body size. So, you know, being denied proper healthcare assessments because they have their weight blamed on everything. I read this awful story of a lady who she kept going to the doctors because she felt very fatigued and unwell. And every time she went, she was told that she needed to lose weight. So she went away, she did that, or she tried to do that, still didn't feel any better, kept going back. And in the end, she went to see a different doctor and her health, had, you know, how she felt had got a lot worse. And it turns out she had a very aggressive cancer. Completely ignored, because all the doctors were just focusing on is her weight. And
there's a study out there of people in America, especially African American women, are scared to get mammograms, are they called pap tests? I can't remember the study. And they literally will not do it because they're scared of the weight stigmatization from the doctor. They're scared of being weighed before they have to have this exam, and it's literally putting their health at risk. Yeah, and it's not good enough.
Yeah, it's awful. And I think it's 1 in 3 women won't go for a smear test because they are so self-conscious about their body. And that's can be a life-saving test. So it's when you start looking into all those things that you actually realize, you know, how messed up it is that we attach so much value to weight, when if we just focused on so the people who can change behaviors to be helped and encouraged to do so, and then the people who really can't change their behaviors. Because I think, I mean, saying people that are, it's such a horrible sweeping statement to say people are lazy or they don't care, and that ignores things like, you know, your social economic disparities, your poverty, the fact that 900,000 people in the UK don't have a fridge freezer. So it's all right saying, you know, go buy some fresh fruit or
vegetables. They're going to keep it.
Or they don't have, I know where the study is, but I can't remember the exact number, but there was like nearly 1 million people living without a cooker. So saying, oh, we just need to educate people in, you know, how to eat, misses out a huge chunk of people who don't have access to these things.
Food deserts.
Yeah, food deserts, all that sort of inequality.
I know. I mean, I think we could do a whole other episode on the new Boris Johnson obesity plan. Yeah, I think we probably should. Because I've kept you for far too long today, Amy, and I've enjoyed this chat far too much. It's been awesome. How can people find you, get in touch with you, have a chat with you, everything else?
So I'm on Instagram as Amy Snelling PT, all one word. I'm also part of the Free From Diets campaign, who put on workshops for people who work in schools and other settings. The links to that are all in my bio. I know Molly will kill me if I don't actually mention the workshops on the part of the recording that is going out. So we deliver workshops in schools to help teachers and other adults who work with children to open up a conversation about body image and how that can be made worse in children in schools. And it's really, really important work, because I feel like as a child, if I was taught more, not just about my body, but about how my behaviours can impact other people's experiences in their bodies, I probably would have, been a bit nicer, or maybe wouldn't have fallen into the trap that I fell in, where I felt like weight loss was the be all and end all. Because the other thing about people who are actively trying to lose weight is they're waging war on their own body, but without realizing they're also waging war on everybody else's body. So the other day, a memory popped up on Instagram from when I was doing all my running. And I was very thin, very, very thin. It almost shocked me when I saw it, because I was like, whoa, I don't remember looking like that. And the caption was, "Time to get rid of this belly." So even though my intention was never to make anyone feel bad about their body, by being so self-obsessed with changing what I looked like, the impact I was having was very different, because obviously intention and impact are very different. No one intends to cause harm, but I hope they don't, you know, most of the time they don't intend to cause harm, but the impact is very different. So not only was I saying that my very thin, privileged belly was unacceptable, I was also sending the message that other people's bodies weren't acceptable. So I feel like if these workshops were a thing when I was younger, and that teachers were having this conversation with us in schools, I feel like I would have been able to be more critical and resilient and avoid that. And I think schools have got a huge role to play in terms of talking about bodies and representing more bodies when it comes to fitness and health and dismantling those messages.
And so if they're following advice from the government, then they need some serious help as well, which it sounds like this course definitely is.
Yeah. So we go into all the social determinants of health and how, you know, a lot more makes a child, determines a child's health, just like, and it relates to adults as well. It's not obviously one size for children and then different for adults. It's something that is important throughout their whole lives. And it's also important, especially the school I worked in was in quite a deprived area. So messages around food need to be a little bit more sensitive. So if in year two, you do a lesson on healthy eating where you literally put foods into good and bad. And right. You think about the impact that's having on children who don't have the access to the so-called good foods. They're going to go home, they look in their cupboards and they're going to think, it's oh, bad. We're bad.
And they're being bad. Yeah.
So it's a huge topic, but it's a good introduction for people to start that conversation, and they get a huge pack of information of where to go next with it as well. Book recommendations, research studies to read, the whole shebang, really.
Sounds great. Sounds really awesome. Really awesome. That's wonderful. Amy, thank you so much for your time and eloquence this morning. It's been an absolute treat to chat to you, and I've absolutely adored it, and I'm sure my audience have as well. Nothing really left to say other than thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. It means a hell of a lot to have you and to have these conversations and keep spreading the good message, because it needs to be spoken about and it needs to be shouted from the rooftops loud and clear to everybody out there.
Thank you. It's been my absolute pleasure to have a chat with you this morning. You're one of the only people I'll see today, so that's really nice.
Oh, well, I'm sorry I didn't put makeup on. All right. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
I really hope you enjoyed that interview with Amy. Please feel free to go and follow her. Please open up the conversation with her and discuss what body confidence means a lot more, because as you can tell, it's a massive scope and something that is really, really important that we discuss more of and get more involved with. Once again, if you want to join the Fitness Collective, you can just head to www.thegymstarter.com. That's www.thegymstarter.com, and it'll be very clear on how to join the Fitness Collective on there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Have a great day.